the beast, the man of sin, the son of perdition, the king, the antichrist. All of these names and titles belong to one single individual, a man who is wicked and proud to the utmost extreme. This man is opposed to God and everything that he stands for. This one adamantly stands against Jesus the Messiah. He stands against his kingdom. This one arrogantly supposes that somehow he can stand in the place of Jesus Christ. We very well could call this one the devil's king. Above all other kings, this one is Satan's anointed one. This is his designated ruler for the revived Roman Empire of the end times. And if anyone could be called the personification of evil, this man would fit that description. This one hates God with a burning passion. He will attempt to destroy God's people, especially the Jews. He will lash out against them with even more cruelty and hatred than even Hitler did in times past. Now this man, who's called the beast and the man of sin and the son of perdition and the king and antichrist, perhaps he is alive today. Maybe he is waiting for just the right time to ascend to power and implement his sinister plan. Or maybe this one is not even born yet. We don't know. We can't even assign a personal name to this one. But we can say without doubt that this man one day is going to make an appearance on this earth. This man is going to be the most arrogant, the most blasphemous human that this world has ever known. Now, there are several passages in the scriptures that foretell of this very wicked individual. A lot of these passages are found in the New Testament, but this morning we'll go to the Old Testament, to the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 11 and verses 36 and following. And if you're using one of our Pew Bibles, it's page 1036. This morning we look at the wickedest king ever. And in the first chapter, or the first part of chapter 11, rather, we find Daniel being given a very detailed description of future events. Now, this description is given to him by a holy angel of God. In this account, this revelation that is given to Daniel, it gave him the future of the current world power of the Medo-Persians. And then after that, this revelation from the holy angel gave him another description of empire that would rise after the Medo-Persian Empire, an empire ruled by the Greeks. And for a very little while, this Greek empire, it's a very mighty Greek empire, it would be united, but then its powerful king would die. And that powerful king was named Alexander the Great. And upon Alexander's death, eventually the kingdom was split into four. And each of his, at least one of his generals took part of his kingdom. We have four of them in total. And of these four, there are two that received special attention. There is the king of the south, and the king of the south ruled the kingdom centered in Egypt. There's the king of the north that ruled the kingdom centered in the area of Syria. And we have Throughout centuries, warfare between these two kingdoms, the king of the south attacking the king of the north, and the king of the north attacking the king of the south. Now, you imagine in your mind, Egypt and Syria, and what is in the middle as these two kings go back and forth at each other? Israel is right in the middle, and so Israel was greatly affected by the warfare of the king of the north and the king of the south through years and years of warfare. Now, for a time, the Jews were subject to the Ptolemies of Egypt. And then later on, they were under the authority of the Seleucids of Syria. And at times, they were treated well by their masters, but much of the time, they were abused and oppressed and persecuted. Now, of all the notorious leaders, there is one that really stood out. He was a Greek ruler named Antiochus IV Epiphanes. And this man had an extreme hatred of the Jewish people and their worship of the true and the living God. This one did his best to force the Jews into becoming Greeks in their way of thought and their way of life. Instead of worshiping the true God and keeping his law, Antiochus proclaimed that you have to worship false gods. You can no longer keep the Sabbath. You can no longer circumcise your children. No longer offer the sacrifices to the true and the living God. You have to offer sacrifices to so-called gods like Zeus and others. And anyone that dared disobey Antiochus in these areas would be sentenced to death. This wicked man named Antiochus did much harm to the Jewish people. But in the end, there's a group of Jews that rebelled against him and his authority. And this group of Jews had quite a bit of success. And eventually, Antiochus himself died, and he was done away with. Now this man, Antiochus IV Epiphanes, was a very wicked man. But as evil as this man was, there's another man that totally eclipses his wickedness. This man is called the king in Daniel chapter 11, verse 36. Yes, Antiochus foreshadowed this wicked king, but the wicked king that we read about in Daniel 11, 36 is even more terrible than Antiochus. Now, this one described in Daniel chapter 11, verse 36, this one is going to persecute the Jews to an even greater extent than Antiochus did. This one is going to meet with success for a time, but at its appointed time, at this king's appointed time, he too is going to meet his end. Now for Daniel, as he received this revelation recorded for us in Daniel 11, all of these events were still future for him. Now we, as we look at Daniel chapter 11, many of the events have already occurred. We'd consider them fulfilled prophecy. So we compared the words of Daniel 11, the first part of the chapter, with the annals of history, and we are able to determine, well, this verse is referring to this king, and this verse is referring to this event that would happen in Daniel's future, but it's in our past now. It was fulfilled exactly like God said it would be. But when we come to verse 36 and on down through the rest of the chapter, we look at what is said here and we compare it with history, and there is no man in history that compares with the description that we find in Daniel chapter 11, verses 36 down through 45. And so I believe very strongly that what we read in verses 36 down through 45, and even into chapter 12, looks ahead to the future for us also. This wicked king is the one described by Paul and Jesus. He's known as the Antichrist. He's known as the son of perdition. He's a very wicked man that still remains in our future. So who is this wicked one? This one who will yet be revealed? Who is this one who is even more evil than Hitler or Mussolini or any of the other wicked men of our past? Well, we find a description of him in verse 36 of chapter 11. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Now, this description of this notorious king begins with a statement that really isn't all that uncommon. It says here that this one is going to do according to his will. He's going to do as he pleases. That's what the angel told Daniel. Well, if we'd go back to Daniel chapter 5 and verse 19, we have Daniel speaking of the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, during the height of his power, he did what he pleased. He killed whoever he wanted to kill, and he kept alive whoever he wanted to keep alive. He set men up in positions of authority, and he took them down from positions of authority. So Nebuchadnezzar, a mighty king, he did as he pleased, keeping in mind God is the one who is ultimately in control. In Daniel chapter 11 and verse 3, we read about Alexander the Great, the leader of this great, vast Greek empire before it was divided. Alexander the Great was able to do whatever he pleased too, from a human perspective. And so in verse 36, whenever we read about this wicked king, this king will do according to his will. That's not really all that uncommon when it comes to rulers of this world. There are other powerful kings that have done exactly as they wished as well. But as we continue reading on, the angel tells Daniel that this coming king will exalt himself. He will magnify himself above every god. He will speak marvelous things, or it's the idea of outrageous things, even blasphemous things against the God of gods. Now, there are many kings in the past, or at least a handful of kings, there are several of them, that are so powerful that they do whatever they wish. But there are far fewer kings in the past that have done what this king will do in the future. There are far fewer rulers that exalt themselves above every so-called god. Yes, there are very wicked rulers in this world today, and there have been many wicked rulers in the past. But many times, even though they may be terribly wicked and terribly perverse, usually they maintain some sort of loyalty to either a god with a little g, some sort of idol or a god that they worship, or they maintain some sort of loyalty to even the true God, even though they don't actually believe in him and obey him. Antiochus, this wicked one that we saw earlier in chapter 11, he still maintained loyalty to the Greek god that is known as Zeus. He had these gods that he worshipped. He didn't exalt himself above all those gods. Now, in recent times, there are many rulers that claim to worship the true and the living God. Even in ancient times, we have kings like Cyrus. Cyrus wanted to have it good with all of the gods, whether it be the true God or the false gods. There are some in the past and many today that would demean the true and the living God. We have the Assyrians of the past that would have spoke down concerning the true God. But this future king will be characterized by his taunting words against the true God, who will blaspheme him like none other. Now you'd think that God would immediately judge such a wicked and perverse king. Just like he judged Nebuchadnezzar for his pride, he judged Herod in the Gospels for his acceptance of divine honors. But God in his sovereignty will allow this wicked king, even in spite of all of his exaltation of himself and putting himself above every god and exalting himself, God is going to allow him to prosper for a time. See, I believe that this reference to the king and to this time, even in the verse 36, it says, he will prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. When is this time of indignation? I believe it's looking ahead to that future 70th week. Remember back in Daniel when we read about 70 weeks? 70 weeks of years are determined for the people of Israel. And 69 of those weeks have been accomplished already. But Daniel, I believe, here is looking ahead to that 70th week, that final week of years in which God's indignation against his people will be poured out. And I believe that is when this wicked king will be revealed by God. This king will have freedom and power for a time, but then whenever that time expires, this king, as wicked as he is, as powerful as he is, will meet his divinely appointed end. Well, there's more to learn about this wicked leader as we read in verse 37. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Now, earlier the angel told Daniel that this king would exalt himself and magnify himself above every god and speak outrageous things against the true God. But now Daniel says that this one is going to not regard the God of his fathers. Now, as you look at verse 37 in the King James, you realize that the word God is capitalized. And so whenever we see that capital G-O-D, we think of the true and the living God, don't we? We go back to the language in which the King James and all English translations were translated from. We go back to the Hebrew, and the word is Elohim. Now, it may sound like a familiar word, and there are many times where this word Elohim refers to the true and the living God. There are other times when Elohim is used for false gods, and the word Elohim is actually a plural. So is this referring to the true God, or is it referring to false gods? And the scenario could work out either way, couldn't it? Looking at verse 37, there are people who have said, well, the Antichrist, this king, this man of sin, must be a Jew because he's not recognizing, he's not regarding the God of his fathers. But that's not necessarily the best interpretation or the only interpretation, because it could be referring to him not regarding the gods of his fathers. He may be a Jew, we don't know. He could be a pagan, Gentile, who is not regarding the gods, the false idols, the false objects of worship of his ancestors. Either one could be communicated by this verse. But either way, he is not going on with family tradition. He's not worshiping the same ones that his fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers worshipped. He's He's breaking clean with the past, and it's not a good thing. Notice also what he's not going to do. He's not going to be regarding the desire of women. Now, normally, whenever we read that phrase, we think about the natural attraction of men, males, for females. That's natural. Possibly, it's talking about the Antichrist, this king, not having that natural inclination, not regarding the desire of women. There is another option as well. You think about years before Jesus Christ was born, what did the young Jewish ladies always have a desire for? They were desiring to bear the Messiah. The desire of women in the years before Jesus Christ was to be the one who would have the Messiah as their child. Possibly Daniel is referring to that here in this passage. When the angel says this, the Antichrist, this king, does not have the desire of women. He has no regard for the Messiah, Jesus Christ. Either way, whether it's referring to the natural inclination of males toward females, or referring to the desire of the Jewish people, and especially Jewish women, for the Messiah, either one, things aren't right, are they? This king is going to be so wicked that he's not going to have natural inclinations. He's not going to have a proper regard for the Messiah either. He goes on to say here, the angel does, nor regard any god. So he's not going to be submissive or recognizing any god at all, any recognized god. He's going to magnify himself above all. Instead of worshiping Zeus or Baal or worshiping the true God, he's going to say, I'm God. I am the one that everybody should be worshiping. We continue on in verses 38 and 39. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do on the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and shall divide the land for gain. So this king, this wicked individual, this one known later on as the Antichrist, instead of worshiping the true God, or instead of worshiping any gods that his ancestors had worshipped, instead of acknowledging any other god, this ruler is going to honor the God of forces. Once again, the King James has this word capitalized, but I believe it should be a lowercase. The God of forces with a lowercase g. So who is this God of fortresses or God of forces? Now, this is a god that his ancestors did not know. This is a god that will be honored by this king with great treasures of gold and silver and precious stones and many other valuables. This king, in his wickedness, will funnel the resources of his kingdom to this god of fortresses, this god of forces. Now, who is this god that this king has made for himself? Well, we can't say for sure, but I believe that instead of worshiping the true God, or a god like Baal, or like Zeus, he is worshiping a god of his own making called war, or military prowess. We could call it something like that. The resources of this king are poured into armies, and navies, and weapons. His supreme goal, his object of devotion, is military conquest, world domination. He wants to reign supreme in the world. He's addicted to power and violence. Now, for a while, it appears as if this king's devotion to this god called war, or military prowess, it seems as if he is having great success, because he's going to take enemy fortress, one after the other after the other. And no doubt he will say, I'm empowered by this so-called god, this god of war, this god of military prowess, and he conquers foreign lands. And as he conquers these lands, he's going to reward those who are loyal to him, those who bow down to his authority. He's going to parcel out land that he has conquered, very possibly giving it to the highest bidder. This is the picture that is painted by the holy angel to Daniel, of this wicked and blasphemous king of future ages. This is a king that will yet be revealed in the future. Now, earlier in Daniel, we have reference to this king as well, just in different terms. If we flip back to Daniel chapter 7, we read this in verses 24 and 25. We have the imagery of 10 horns. 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue three kings, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. Daniel here looking ahead to the future, and there will be 10 kings at one point in time, and three of these kings will be supplanted by another king. And this king is the Antichrist, the king that we read about in Daniel chapter 11. And what is he going to do? He will blaspheme the Most High God. He will tire out the saints. He will try to change laws and times. And the saints will even be given into his hand for a period of 3.5 years. Now, Paul in the New Testament also gives us revelation concerning this wicked man. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Verse 4. Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Here Paul referring to the king of Daniel chapter 11, this one who in a future day will exalt himself above the true God. He will exalt himself above everything else, and he will say, you must worship me and me alone. The Apostle John in Revelation chapter 13 talks about the same king referred to as the beast. First of all, we read, they worship the dragon, who is the devil. He gave power to the beast, who is the king of Daniel 11, the Antichrist. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Okay, even with that question, remember what we read earlier in Daniel chapter 11, how this king is going to be, he's going to have a god of fortresses. He's going to elevate war and military prowess to the height of basically worshiping it. So here the people ask, who is able to make war with him? There was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So you see how these passages agree with the passage that we're working through here in Daniel chapter 11. But going back to Daniel 11 now, we've seen how this future king distinguishes himself from his predecessors in matters of worship and war. But now as we come to verses 40 through 45, we find some examples of his military prowess. We read about how this king defeats enemies that come at him from various fronts. But in spite of all of these enemies coming against him, he's going to defeat them. But eventually, even after he has defeated many enemies, his end comes. It's his divinely appointed time to go. Verse 40. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasuries of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. So going back here to verse 40, the angel tells Daniel that there are going to be various military exploits that will be brought against this king, this wicked king. And the time is identified here in verse 40, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him. That's looking ahead to the 70th week of Daniel, that time what we call the tribulation. It's at the time of the end. And during the seven-year period of tribulation, the mighty king that we have read about, this wicked king, the Antichrist, he will receive opposition on various fronts. Okay, so there will be enemy armies attacking him from one side and another, from various directions. We read, first of all, that this king, the wicked king, the Antichrist, will be attacked at on two fronts, from the south and from the north. Now, earlier in chapter 11, we read about the king of the south being centered in Egypt and the king of the north being centered in Syria. And very possibly it's referring to the same basic geographic area. We can't say for sure, but it sure seems as if that would be the case. Now, earlier in Daniel chapter 9, we read about that there would be a covenant made with the people of Israel. This covenant would be made for 7 years, and I believe it's this king that makes the covenant with Israel. The Antichrist makes a covenant, and the terms of this covenant we can't say positively, but I think that part of the covenant terms were the Antichrist, this king that we're reading about, would guarantee peace for Israel. So any foes that would come against Israel, the Antichrist would defend Israel from them. I think that's part of the covenant that was made. And so we have the king of the south and the king of the north, I believe they are attacking Antichrist's covenant partner, Israel. So in attacking Israel, what are they doing? In essence, they're attacking the king. They're attacking Antichrist. And so from the south comes a force against the wicked king. From the north comes an even greater force, it seems, because this force from the north storms against the king with great military force, with chariots and horsemen and many ships. And there are interpreters today that would say, well, when you read about chariots and horsemen and ships, that's talking about the military forces of Daniel's day. Now, we think about 21st century America and a future where this king is going to be revealed. We don't have chariots anymore. That's not how we fight wars. We don't have horsemen used very much. We don't have, yes, we have ships, but they're far different than the ships of millennia ago. So there are people today that would say that this description is geared toward Daniel's day. Daniel had no conception of air force fighters and tanks and nuclear bombs and all of that. He had no idea about that. But I personally am hesitant to deny the fact that there will be chariots and horses and other weapons, horses, things like that involved. I'd be hesitant to go that route. But we have, regardless, extreme opposition on two fronts, from the north and from the south. Huge armies involved. And you'd think that surely this wicked king would be defeated very, very strongly. But that's not the case. This king brings the power of his military might, and he brings his armies into the countries affected, and he overwhelms his enemies. He passes through many lands, and as he confronts both the king of the north and the king of the south and their great armies, as he does this, he enters into the glorious land, the land of Israel. He has widespread victory. Yes, there are a few nations that escape his power, he doesn't have victory over these necessarily. These countries are spared from his clutches, the countries of Edom and Moab and some of the people of Ammon, that's the area of Jordan right now. But in striking against his enemies, he's going to come up against the land of Egypt. Remember, Egypt was where the king of the south had his headquarters earlier. And upon conquering Egypt, he captures a great amount of wealth, and he has gold and silver and precious things. In addition, we read about the Libyans and the Ethiopians being at his steps. I believe that talks about them being in submission to this great wicked king. Perhaps he allied themselves earlier with Egypt, but now they're aligning themselves with the Antichrist. Look at verses 44 and 45 now. So we have two powerful armies attacking this king from two directions, and the Antichrist, this wicked king, defeats them overwhelmingly. You'd think that you'd have a time of peace now, that you'd be able to rest from his military exploits. But now look at verses 44 and 45. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, and utterly to take away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. So no sooner had this wicked king conquered the armies of the king of the south and the king of the north, but he hears word that there are other armies coming against him. He hears word from the east and from the north. And so this king, this wicked king, with all of his military might, goes up against this threat. And you notice in verse 44, he goes forth with great fury to destroy and to utterly take away many. Once again, this wicked king has victory over all of these opposing armies. And in verse 45, he plants the tabernacles of his palaces. He sets up his headquarters where? Between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. in Israel, Jerusalem, Antichrist, the wicked king, sets up the headquarters for his kingdom. Now, from our viewpoint, from a human perspective, this wicked king has defeated all of his enemies. You'd think he'd be able to reign supreme over the world for years and years and years. But God's time is far different than man's time. God's ways are far different than man's ways. So God has his way. And notice in verse 45, after we read about him setting up his headquarters in the glorious holy mountain in Israel, yet shall he come to his end, and none shall help him. So the king was allowed to wreak havoc, have a reign of terror for some period of years. 7 years total for his time of dominance. 3.5 years where he's persecuting Israel very much, as we see in chapter 12 and verse 1. But whenever God's time arrives for his judgment, this king, the Antichrist, is done away with. He is judged by God. Yes, the king was able to do as he pleased for a time. He had great military success. But whenever God's time for departure arrives, that's when the Antichrist is judged. He's thrown into the lake of fire. There's no one that can help him. There's no one to help him. Now, up until this point in time, as we read verses 36 down to our current verse, verse 45, we don't read about how this king impacts the children of Israel. You know, we've read about how he exalts himself above any so-called God, and he blasphemes the true God, and he worships the so-called God of war. Okay, he makes war his God, or military prowess his God. But how is Israel affected in all of this? Well, we come to chapter 12 of Daniel in verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the people, for the children of thy people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even until that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone shall be that shall be found and written in the book. So this wicked king had dominance for a period of time. It's during this last week of 70, the last week of the 70. And during this last period of 7 years, the time of the tribulation, there's somebody that stands up for Israel. Who is it? It's Michael, their prince. Michael the archangel, as he's called in other places. He stands up for the cause of his Jewish people. He stands up for God's people. But when Michael stands up for his people, does that mean that Israel is exempt from hardship and persecution and death? That's not how it works out. Yes, Michael stands up for his people, but his people still have to endure great hardship and trouble, a time of terrible tribulation. I believe Michael is working on behalf of the Jews, but yet there still is great hardship and trouble that they have to work their way through, that they have to endure. In this time of tribulation, we read in Daniel, it will far exceed anything that any nation has ever experienced. And especially this hardship is brought upon the Jewish people, God's people. Now, Jesus himself speaks about this time in Matthew 24. We read in verses 15 through 22. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Jesus refers to this prophecy of Daniel. And he says, for his people Israel, there is going to be a time of hardship and tribulation and persecution like has never been seen in this world. And Jesus even says, unless those days would be shortened, there wouldn't be anyone that would survive. No flesh would be saved. But God has a plan. And at the exact time of his plan, he's going to do away with this wicked king, and Israel will be delivered. Now, as we come to verse 2, and even earlier in verse 1, We read about this time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time shall thy people be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. So there is a time of deliverance at the end of what we call the tribulation period. At the end of the time of this king's reign, the king will be done away with, and there will be a time of deliverance. Not all Israel are delivered, though. Only those who are truly Israel. Those who have trusted in Jesus, even as Abraham long ago trusted in God, and it was imputed to him for righteousness. It's during this time that the Jews, those who have trusted in Jesus, will be delivered. Everyone that's written in the book. But even those who have been martyred for the cause of Christ, they too have a deliverance, as we read in verses 2 and 3. Now the king, the wicked king, is going to kill many, many true followers of God. There are followers of God that will survive and be delivered physically, but there are many that will be killed, true believers that will be killed, and they too experience victory in Jesus, as we see in verses 2 and 3. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. So at the end of that time, there's going to be a resurrection, a great resurrection. First of all, Daniel is told that there's going to be a resurrection of those who are righteous. Some will be resurrected to everlasting life. There are many people during the tribulation period, during that last period of 7 years, they'll be true to God, they'll be true to Jesus Christ, and the wicked king will kill them. Many will be beheaded for the cause of Christ. These ones have remained true to God, and they will pay for it with their lives. Their martyrdom, though, is not defeat, it is victory. Because in the end, yes, even though their bodies have been killed, their bodies are decomposing, they return back to the dust of the earth, one day, in God's perfect time, they will be resurrected, and resurrected to eternal life. I believe also during this time, we have Gentiles, Gentile believers that are resurrected, as well as the Jewish believers that are resurrected. I believe the Old Testament saints are resurrected at this time as well, so that they can enter into the kingdom of Christ, enjoy the benefits of the millennial kingdom. But then after those 1,000 years, there are others that are resurrected. These are ones who are wicked people. They will be resurrected to shame and everlasting contempt. Their resurrection is a resurrection to eternal death. We read these words in Revelation chapter 20, verses 4 through 6. And I saw thrones and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, but they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. The rest of the dead lived not again until 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. As we read in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 3, those who are resurrected to eternal life, these ones are known as people who are wise, and in their resurrection they're going to shine like the heavens above. Those who have instructed many, who have turned many to righteousness, they will shine in the resurrection bodies as the stars of the heaven. That's not defeat, is it? Even though the Antichrist, this wicked king, killed them, they're going to shine as the stars of heaven, reflecting God's wonderful glory. Those who are resurrected at the end of the kingdom, those who are resurrected to shame and contempt, we read about it in Revelation chapter, the same chapter, chapter 20, in verses 11 and following. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according to their works. The sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. God's will is going to be done. Now, as we consider what the angel told Daniel, all of this was future in Daniel's day. We, looking at the same prophecy, we can see parts of the prophecy, a lot of the prophecy, have been fulfilled in the past. But there remains part of it yet to be fulfilled in the future. And in that future day, there's going to be a very wicked king, more wicked than Hitler, more wicked than, you think of the most terrible people that have lived on this earth. This king is going to outdo all of them in his wickedness and his blasphemy. He will exalt himself above God. He will want everybody to worship him, and indeed many people will worship him. This man is going to be a man of war. He's going to, I believe, establish worldwide dominion for a time. But at that time of God's appointing, the king is going to be judged by God, thrown into the lake of fire. All those that he persecuted, all those who are true believers in Jesus will be delivered. Their deliverance, some of them will be a physical deliverance. They'll enter in alive into the millennial kingdom. Others will be resurrected, and that's a glorious victory as well. As we think about what the future holds, we know a lot of what holds. A lot of times people will say, well, I sure hope things get better. Well, are things going to get better? The answer is, yes, they will get better. But first of all, things are going to get a lot worse. So people are going to get more and more wicked, and eventually this man of sin, this king, the Antichrist, is going to be revealed. The height of wickedness, we could say. The manifestation of wickedness in human form, we could call it. But that man is going to be defeated by God Almighty. Jesus Christ will defeat him with the word of his mouth. And Jesus will set up his kingdom. We have the resurrection of the righteous. We have eternal glory. What a day that will be whenever we can see Jesus face to face. So let's stand in awe of God today. God is the one who holds the future in his hands. This chapter in Daniel is difficult to understand. There's a lot of details, especially the earlier part of the chapter, but even parts of this chapter. It's more difficult to understand, but we take away this morning, God is the one in control. He has the future in his hands. And even though things will get worse and worse, God one day is going to do away with the wickedness. He's going to judge this evil king, and he's going to set up his kingdom, and Jesus will reign in righteousness. And even looking beyond that, there's going to be an eternal reign of righteousness. We'll be with Jesus. The only way we'll be with Jesus, though, is if we have trusted in him as our Savior. So the question is, have you trusted in Jesus? Are you on the winning side? Jesus has the victory. If you know Jesus, you have the victory in him.